Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the Bloviators of free speech, because Andy Hitchcock's with me today, and we are going to do a show called The Bloviators. That's our new nickname. It used to be a different nickname, something about Boomer Flagel, Clower, or whatever, something completely unpronounceable that nobody could wrap their heads around. So, but now we're the Bloviators. But anyway, bloviate some money over to us, not to us personally, but to RBN at, oh, what is it? It is 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664, or phone it in to 1-800-724-2719, extension 3. All right. So, Andy, welcome to my show.
Thank you, Patrick. Great to be working with you again. And we were having a chat just before the show as to what to kind of bring out, because, of course, Mark would generally do his Dankoff report, which could last about 15 minutes, and then that would lead into a discussion on the topics that he had. And Patrick came up with the idea of sitcoms, because Patrick is a very big fan of UK sitcoms. Indeed, there's one called Father Ted that I'd heard of, but the premise never interested me, some comedy about some, you know, Catholic priest, etc. So although it had been around since the 1990s, I never watched it until last year, over 20 years after it had come out. And that was only because Patrick was telling me about it a lot. So I ended up watching it, and I really, really enjoyed it. And, yeah, so do you want to talk about that to start with, Patrick, or any other things you'd like to raise?
Father Ted. So there was only 26 episodes, I think. They only did three seasons, and then what was the guy's name? Something McDermott. What was his first name?
It was Dermott. I'll find out the surname, but yeah,
can't even remember his name.
He basically
passed
away.
He was Father Ted, yeah. And he died in a car accident. So that was that. The co-star of the show, who had a similarly unmemorizable Irish name, Father Dougal. He went on to do My Hero. I don't know if you ever saw My Hero. But Father Ted was I just thought it was hilarious. It was very, very silly. Maybe it was subversive. Maybe they were making so much fun of the church and whatnot. Every now and then there would be a reference to some church position on contraception or whatnot. And of course, Father Dougal, who was mentally retarded, they were being visited by some other priests, and he was just questioning the existence of God, and one of the other priests just decided, you know, it's all a bunch of bollocks, isn't it? And he wound up becoming a hippie and driving off to Europe in a VW van full of hippies. So it was, I don't know, was it the greatest show? I don't know, but it made me laugh a lot.
That's the key thing, really. And just a couple of bits here. It's Dermot Morgan who played Father Ted, and Ardal O'Hanlon who played Father Dougal, and went on to do My Hero, which I didn't actually see, but I'm familiar with. It's some sort of spoof on a superhero thing. What actually happened with Dermot Morgan, the series ended after three series, and he died straight after the third series. And it says here on the Wikipedia page under recording, one day after the shooting of Series 3 wrapped, Dermot Morgan died of a heart attack, age 45. As a mark of respect, the third series was first broadcast a week later than originally planned. But they declined to continue anyway. I think it was both the writers and the cast, they felt that the three series had had its, you know, kind of covered everything they wanted to, and they didn't want to sort of overdo it, which can happen with a lot of TV series, that something very different. The X-Files, for example, was due to finish at the end of season 5, and then the movie was coming out. That had actually been recorded before they recorded season five, but it followed at the end. So I think that the dream was to go Star Trek style and do the original series and then have that original cast do those series of eight or nine, whatever movies that they did. But it didn't work out that way. The first movie wasn't as well received as they hoped. And then they got offered a silly amount of money to do a sixth series, and it went on to do nine series. And as someone who regards that as one of his favourite shows, I'd have to say, but as each series aired, you know, you can rank the best series for me in the order of when they were recorded. So the first is the best, the second is the second best, third, etc., etc. Because things like that, they kind of, you get your best ideas early on. And it can happen in a lot of cases. And earlier today, just by chance, I had a bit of time before I was recording. I'm recording this Monday. Many of you will know that on RBN, because this is probably the only time that Patrick has broadcast our show the day before I have. He generally broadcasts it later in the week. So we're actually recording on Monday and going out on Monday on RBN. So again, I encourage all the audience to support RBN, as Patrick said, via the methods he mentioned earlier in the show. But I watched Fawlty Towers, the first episode. Now, that only had two series of six episodes each in 1975.
Was that all?
Yep.
There's only 12 episodes of Fawlty Towers.
Yep. 75 and 79. And many people in the so-called alternative comedy genre in the 1980s, the likes of The Young Ones, different things like that, they kept the two-series model because they felt that the Fawlty Towers was essentially the model to follow, because it was so cleverly done that they were so impressed with it they wanted to just stick to those two series themselves. Back to you.
So there's only two series of six each? There was 12 episodes?
Yeah, that's correct. There were no Christmas specials.
Did you say in 75 and 79 there was 4 years in between?
Yeah, exactly. I could look up why there was such a gap. But, of course, now there's talk of it potentially coming back, which I think would be an absolute disaster.
So John Cleese was in it, of course, and the housekeeper was his wife, who was beautiful. Who would have ever guessed he would have had such a young, beautiful wife? But he did. I think they eventually divorced.
I believe they did. Yeah, she was also the co-writer of the series.
Yeah.
And let's see. The show was ranked first on a list of the 100 greatest British television programs drawn up by the British Film Institute in 2000, and in 2019 it was named the greatest ever British TV sitcom by a panel of comedy experts compiled by the Radio Times. And that's basically our equivalent of the TV Guide. It's the top selling sort of TV guide in the UK. It says here a sequel series starring Cleese and his daughter Camilla is in development as of February 2023, and it would not be broadcast on the BBC. The funny thing about the origins that I'm aware of Fawlty Towers, I'll read to you here. In May 1970, the Monty Python comedy group stayed at the now demolished Glen Eagles Hotel in Torquay, where Fawlty Towers is also based. That's in Devon. While filming on location there, John Cleese was fascinated by the behaviour of the owner, Donald Sinclair, later describing him as the rudest man I've ever come across in my life. Among such behaviour by Sinclair was his criticism of Terry Gilliam's Too American table etiquette and tossing Eric Idle's briefcase out of a window in case it contained a bomb. Asked why anyone would want to bomb the hotel.
Pretty rude.
Yeah. Asked why anyone would want to bomb the hotel, Sinclair replied, "We've had a lot of staff problems. Michael Palin," states Sinclair, "seemed to view us as a colossal inconvenience." Rosemary Harrison, a waitress at the Glen Eagles under Sinclair, described him as bonkers, which means stupid, and lacking in hospitality, deeming him totally unsuitable as a hotel proprietor. It was as if he didn't want the guests to be there. Cleese and his then-wife Connie Booth stayed on at the hotel after filming, furthering their research of its owner. There you go. So it was actually based on a real hotel proprietor. Back to you, Patrick.
Connie Booth. So Connie Booth played the maid.
Yeah.
Fawlty Towers. Okay. But he had a much more, what would you call, a matronly or much more middle-aged actress play his wife in Fawlty Towers.
Sybil.
Who was Sybil, yeah. I must have seen all 12 episodes because it's such a surprise to me that there's only 12. There was the one where they were having some guests from Germany and John Cleese had fallen down and or banged his head somehow and had a concussion. And one of the symptoms of the concussion was he would break into Hitler imitations whenever the Germans were around. And start his if he was asking them for the order, he would just go into a Nuremberg style speech, and it was traumatic for the Germans.
I guess
it would be, right?
Yeah, it's interesting here because you asked about the time between both series 75 and 79, and there's a note here about bringing the series back because there have been a lot of throughout the 80s and 90s, why can't we bring it back? And it says Cleese was reluctant to bring the series back because of Connie Booth's unwillingness to be involved. She had practically retreated from public life after the show finished and had been initially unwilling to collaborate on a second series, which explains the four-year gap between the production. So there you go. So she kind of just wanted to do one series and then leave it at that, by the sounds of it. And she was American. She was born in Indianapolis, Indiana, on the 2nd of December 1940. Her father was a Wall Street stockbroker and her mother an actress. The family later moved to New York State. Booth entered acting and worked as a Broadway understudy and waitress. She met John Cleese while he was working in New York City. They married on February the 20th of 1968, and they divorced in 1978. So they divorced before they basically, released the second and final series.
How about that? So she was American, and then the waiter was, at least in the series, the waiter was a Spaniard. He's from Barcelona. From Barcelona. And every time he did something inappropriate or unexplainable, John Cleese would just make the excuse to the guests, don't mind him, he's from Barcelona.
Yes, and what I said earlier, it says here that the decision by Cleese and Booth to quit before a third series has often been lauded as it ensured the show's successful status would not be weakened with later, lower quality work. Subsequently, it has inspired the makers of other shows to do likewise. Ricky Gervais and Stephen Merchant refused to make a third series of either The Office or Extras, citing Fawlty Towers' short lifespan. Rick Mayall, Ben Elton and Lisa Mayer, the writers behind The Young Ones, which also ran for only two series, used this explanation as well. And Ben Elton you'd be more familiar with his writing of Blackadder, which we can move on to if you would like, because I know that's one of your favourites. He came in as writer with Richard Curtis for series 2 to 4. Rowan Atkinson wrote with Richard Curtis for series 1 of Blackadder, and Rowan Atkinson literally had to beg in the BBC offices for a second series, and the only way that they would grant it is if he was removed from the writing and only played the Blackadder character. And Ben Elton came in, and he was one of this sort of alternative comedy people. Go ahead.
So Rowan Atkinson only wrote for the first series and didn't write for the subsequent three?
He wasn't credited. I mean, sometimes, actors come in like, when Rick Mayall came in and did Lord Flashheart, because of the sort of actor that he was, a lot of actors come in and they bring some of the most memorable scenes that with them, they kind of write it on set almost. I mean, we're completely jumping to a different genre, but the here's Johnny line out of The Shining, which is the most sort of iconic line from that film, that wasn't in the script. That was just something that Jack Nicholson came up with on set. So that's how things can, but certainly as a official sit down and write, it was Rowan Atkinson was only the first series.
Lord Flashheart. So who did Lord Flashheart? Because he was very much larger than life.
That was a guy called Rick Mayall, who was very popular in the UK. He was started off in a program called The Young Ones. He also had a little role in American Werewolf in London, where, have you ever seen that film, Patrick?
Yes, I did.
When they do the joke at the beginning in the pub, where they're talking about the punchline is the American throws the Mexican out of the plane or the balloon or what have you, he's one of the people there laughing. And the guy who tells the joke, Brian Glover, the bald guy there, he's very much, he was actually a wrestler in the UK, and was very sort of played the foil type of wrestler and was quite funny to watch, and ended up, you know, being hired by little bit parts in sitcoms and other things as well. So, yeah.
I don't remember that movie very well. I saw it when it first came out, and all I remember is that the werewolf guy died at the end, right? And it was kind of sad. He's there dying, and then all of a sudden, the final music comes in. It was Blue Moon by the Platters, which I play sometimes, and it was a bomb, 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 and it was just such a contrast, such an emotional contrast. And that's what I remember from that movie, American Werewolf in London. I don't really remember anything about the story.
It's not one of my favourites. I think I've seen it once. I've never been big on werewolf films anyway. I think that this was done as a sort of more of a spoof one, if you like. But it was that led to Michael Jackson hiring, is it John Landis, to do the Thriller video? Because, of course, Jackson turned into a werewolf in that. So, what are your thoughts on... And the one thing about Blackadder, when Ben Elton came in to replace Rowan Atkinson as the writer alongside Richard Curtis, who wrote for all four series, and he went on to do things like Love Actually, I believe, and Notting Hill, you know, these big films that were quite famous worldwide, which I've never seen, so it wouldn't interest me. He made the point that when you look at the first series of Blackadder, you can see a lot of its films sort of in the country, and there's some big open shots, etc. Ben Elton said, Rowan Atkinson falling off a horse a distance away isn't funny. You have to have him close up, because, of course, the way Rowan Atkinson uses his face and things like that, he's a very visual comic. And that was his big thing that he kind of said was what he brought to the table. And that's when you sort of see that pretty much all of the second, third and fourth series, you can see is filmed in a studio. There are no, you know, exterior scenes I can remember of any of it. I mean, even the final series when they're in the trenches, you can see that is a
going over
set.
The top.
Yeah. So you can see
when
the
they went over
there.
The top, I guess that was outside of the studio, going over the top, the very, very final scene where they all died.
Well, they have that image at the end of the sort of Flanders Field, don't they? I think that was kind of a still image that they picked up, but it was all kind of... Yeah, it was studio done. It was designed, I think, to end there. And I thought, with that, for me, it was kind of, I don't know, a lot of people like the second series. I think that the final series was the best, Blackadder Goes Forth. I thought that they just got it right there. And there were some comments, I forget from who said that was the series that we finally had it how we wanted it. And I guess that's why they left it there. But I would say the first series is perhaps the weakest, and then maybe the third, and then
right.
the second. Yeah,
the first was the weakest, and that's why I was surprised to hear that's the one that Rowan Atkinson wrote for, because that's the one that's least memorable to me. I couldn't even... So, for the listeners who aren't familiar with these, there was... Each of these four series for Blackadder took place in a different historical time for Britain, and the fourth series was in the trenches in World War I. The third series... And Blackadder was he was a captain, and he had who's the guy? The guy who plays House in an American medical drama.
That's Hugh Laurie.
Hugh Laurie played a daft but upper class lieutenant, and then there was a character in all the series named Baldrick, who was slow. He wasn't daft the way. Hugh Laurie's character was, but he was slow and not smart and small and the butt of jokes, and those were the three main characters in the trench for that third series, and then there was a couple other characters who were at headquarters. But you went back, the third one was what was that, Prince who it was King George's son, right? King
yeah,
George I'll... from the American Revolution's son.
Yeah, it's I'll just read, because this is only four lines. The first series made in 1983 was called The Blackadder and was set in...
Do you truly want to stay out of the system? Are you prepared to buy into the biggest scam since the Iraqi dinar? If not, then put your money where it belongs, in your possession, not in the hands of an international MLM cartel. At Kettle Moraine Limited, we will provide you with the finest Swiss-minted detachable gram sheets of pure 24-karat gold for hundreds of dollars less than the so-called privately issued credit cards with elusive gold backing. Gold backing? The only gold that I want is in my back pocket, not backed by promises of an operation even the U.S. Chamber of Commerce is suspect of, giving a rating of C-. To get the full story, visit SierraMadrePreciousMetals.com and go to the Valcombe Bullion Vault. Once you have read the whole story about the scam being perpetrated on an unsuspecting public and how you can avoid being a victim by purchasing these beautiful, barterable, tradable sheets of gold at tremendous savings and in the strictest of privacy, be prepared to take the steps to protect your wealth with the purchase of the real deal. Detachable 50-gram gold bars from Kettle Moraine Limited by calling 602-799-8214. Ask about our 1-ounce Valcombe detachable bars, which break into 1/10-ounce bars. And don't forget, for all of your precious metal needs, whether buying or having the need to sell, call Kettle Moraine Limited. Remember, no dinar, no celery, and no carrots. If you buy from someone else, tell them you want AU, not BS. Call Kettle Moraine LTD today at 602-799-8214. Kettle Moraine LTD, 602-799-8214.
Are you one of the millions of people who feel like there is a dark cloud hanging over their heads whenever they're using pharmaceutical drugs? For some, the short-term relief can turn into an opioid addiction nightmare. Have you ever wondered why CBD oil is a billion-dollar industry? It's because it works better than opioids and is actually healthy for you. However, CBD oil is stripped of all other helpful compounds found in the hemp plant. According to neuroscientists, the whole hemp plant, otherwise known as hemp paste, is even more effective than the chemically processed CBD oil. Are you ready to take back your health? You can try hemp paste for the price of a cup of coffee.
Hemppaste.com/RBN. Free shipping on orders over $50. See the banners for Hemp Paste at republicbroadcasting.org and visit hemppaste.com/RBN.
But you went back. The third one was, what was that? Prince, who it was, King George's son, right? George from the American Revolution's son.
Yeah, it's I'll just read, because this is only four lines. The first series, made in 1983, was called The Blackadder and was set in the fictional reign of Richard IV. That's 1485 time. The second series,
okay,
Blackadder
II, and that's the one I wouldn't have even been able to identify when it was. I just knew it was early.
Yeah,
but and then the second didn't leave much of an impression.
No, the second series was set during the reign of Elizabeth I, and so then you've got the Black.
And Elizabeth I was a character, and a very, very funny character in it.
Yeah, that's it. She was she reigned from 1558 until 1603, and of course the characters through it, they've always got the same surnames as they go through each of the series, so it's implied that they've descended from these previous ones. But, as you say, absolutely right, this was set in the time of the reign of George III. And it just, the third series, as you were saying, you know, where Hugh Laurie played George III, it just seemed to be a bit empty of characters. But it did contain that amazing episode with the actors in it, that whenever they say the word Macbeth, it's considered bad luck, and so Blackadder drops it all the way through the episode. Do you remember that, Patrick?
Vaguely.
Yeah, it's essentially, it's, I don't know, apparently that it's well known, this isn't fictional, this is something that many actors, I don't know if they still do, but they consider mentioning the title of the play Macbeth as bad luck. And subsequently, these two actors in it end up being sentenced to death. So actually proves to be true in their case, but they tend to refer to Macbeth as the Scottish play. That's the way that the story goes. Any thoughts, any sort of Blackadder memories that jump out for you, Patrick, from any of the series?
So in series three, I don't remember how it resolved. Were two of them executed? Who was executed?
I'm talking about the two actors. Well, I mean there were two actors who played two actors in a particular episode of series three, who are frightened of mentioning the name Macbeth. So I believe all of the actors survive that series, as I recall, but okay. That's not one of my favourites, so I don't remember it like I remember the final episode that you referred to of Blackadder Goes Forth. I think when I go back to Blackadder, I'll probably start at the beginning, because again, there's only six episodes a series, so you're only talking about 3 hours a series, and they've always got the fast forward button on the remote control if you get bored in any parts of it.
Well, you mentioned Lord Flashheart, who his appearance in Blackadder, it was the second season.
Yeah.
It was only maybe 3 minutes or so. It was really brief, but very, very memorable, and it kind of shocking. It was almost as if he had swung onto the set on a rope. You know, he just emerged suddenly. Blackadder was going to marry a woman, and Lord Flashheart just comes crashing in. And they must, you know, it was shot in one, it was just one shot, I think. And partway through, the actor, Lord Flashheart, his fake mustache started coming off. But it was so good that they just left it that way, right? Do you recall that?
Yeah, now that you say it, I'll tell you, yeah.
He just comes in and I guess he had been invited to be the best man because he was Blackadder's long lost, old best friend. And he comes in and he's larger than life. And he walks up to Queenie, that's what he called her, Queenie. And she's giggling. And then Queenie had a middle aged nurse, right? Nursey. And he's, oh, Nursey, I like him firm and fruity. what was the line? Am I glad to see you, or is that a canoe I have in my pocket? Oof! And he was just, everything was just oversized and down, boy, down. It was very, very funny, kind of shocking. And then within the 2 or 3 minutes he was on the set, then the then Blackadder's fiance runs off with him, and that was that.
Yeah, it's written out. He actually. He died quite young. He was in his 50s. Very, very unique, a real sort of kind of cult figure in the UK. He started off, as I say, in The Young Ones, then did a series. Did you ever see a series called The New Statesman, where he played a politician? I don't know if that made it over to America, but that ran for years.
No, I never saw that.
And he played a conservative politician, and this was sort of when Margaret Thatcher was in power. And the conservative politician's name was Alan Bastard, B-Stard. And he was a really nasty conservative politician that kind of embodied all the, you know, took all the allegations of sleaze that certain, probably many of these conservative politicians had committed at the time and probably doing even more so now, and was, took it into a long-running sitcom that was interesting and was funny in places. It wasn't his best work. For me, he did something called Bottom, which he did with a guy out of The Young Ones, and that was kind of his last work, because something happened to him in the 90s, I believe, where he was...
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Man, My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee. It's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
He did something called Bottom, which he did with a guy out of the Young Ones. And that was kind of his last work, because something happened to him in the 90s, I believe, where he was on where he lived. He was on one of these little quad bike things, and basically it rolled over, and it, you know, rolled over onto him. And he had 1998, he had a serious head injury, and it basically... It took him quite a while to get back to act again, because even his regular co-star, Adrian Edmondson, that was in The Young Ones and Bottom with him, said that it was like working with a different person to a certain extent, because something had obviously happened to the brain after that, although I never picked it up on the things that I saw them do together. But he then died at the age of only 56. Wow. And it was a heart attack. And he was just getting ready to go out to go for a run, basically. And, yeah... And then sort of just, after a morning jog, he was 56 years old. So, when he passed away, it was one of those things, you know, when certain people, it just sort of resonates with the nation. So many people were talking about it, because he was never like a huge performer. He wouldn't have the now that people watching, as say Rowan Atkinson would have had with Blackadder, or he would have had with Mr. Bean or stuff like that. But Rick Mayall was almost more loved, if that makes any sense. I'm sure you have people like that in America. They suddenly pass away and there's a great deal more of public outpouring for them than you would necessarily have expected, Patrick.
Yeah. So, no, I'm not familiar with that. All I recall of him is that one scene, but it's very memorable. Now, you mentioned a show about a politician, and I remember I saw a different show about a woman who was just maybe a regular housewife or something, but she got mad about an issue and stood for parliament and got elected. There was a show about her. I don't remember it all that well. But then there was Yes Minister, which became Yes Prime Minister.
Yes.
And that was very funny. And once for my dissertation, I'd gone to interview a politician in an Asian country who, while I was in there, she had a Yes Prime Minister VCR tape on her desk. She was a cabinet minister. And so I don't know. It must have rung true, I suppose. It was funny.
I haven't seen that yet. I heard you bring it up with Mark Colletto recently, but it's definitely worth exploring. It's annoying because I was in a shop a year or so ago, probably longer, but and it was one of these charity shops, secondhand things, and I could have got both series on DVD in a box set for like £3, and I had other things I was watching, and I'd never really, you know, it never interested me when it was on at the time, but then neither did Father Ted, and again, I think it's probably only a couple of series, maybe two series for each of the titles, Yes Minister and Yes Prime Minister. So it wasn't a particularly big box set. So it's something I think I will end up watching at some point. Here it is. Yes Minister, it had 3 7-episode series. A sequel, Yes Prime Minister, ran for 16 episodes. So what's that, 37 total. So obviously they're half an hour each, so that's going to be getting on for 20 hours. But, it's probably worth looking at. What was the highlights of that you took out of it? Because I remember references to it where, you know, senior politicians were saying this is kind of the way a lot of this thing works, really.
Yeah. I don't even know if it was all that funny. It was a comedy. But it just showed a conflict, to an extent, a conflict between the bureaucracy and the politicians, with, in this case, the bureaucracy almost always getting its way. Occasionally, the politicians would get their way. But just the way that the permanent bureaucracy was manipulating the politicians, and, you know, maybe a weakness was that it was too focused on the bureaucracy. Were they showing other forces that be? Were they showing the very strong influence and power of societal forces outside of government? I doubt it. Maybe to an extent, but one of the episodes, the prime minister, he wanted to introduce a draft. He wanted to introduce national service. And the bureaucracy, for whatever reason, thought it was a horrible idea, or at least the Sir Humphreys, who was Sir Humphrey, I think was his name. He was the head of the civil service. He was the chief bureaucrat, and he thought it was a horrible idea. And he told his underling, just go commission a poll that shows that there's no public support for national service. And the underling says, well, what if the public is in support of it? And Sir Humphreys looks at him and says, that's not how opinion polls work. Opinion polls will show whatever you want them to. And then he just gives example of leading questions. And so, for instance, if you want it to show that the public supports national service, you ask, are you worried about the situation with our youth? Do you think our youth, you know, yes or no, do you think our youth have too much time on their hands? Do you think that they're not engaged in proper development and these types of leading questions? And then do you favor national service, compulsory national service? And the answer becomes yes. It says, okay, well, now how about Do you think we have too much? Are we getting too involved in foreign affairs? Do you think the government is encroaching too much on people's lives? And are you worried about being dragged into an unnecessary war or something like that? And then all of a sudden, the answer to the exact same question, you favor national service, it became no. And, you know, that was very illustrative, because this is exactly how, you know, surveys can work. I remember just over the weekend seeing a survey or a study by the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, showing that fully like 26% of American youth no longer considers themselves straight. And, you know, that's as opposed to, say, in 2015 or 2011, where it was only 11% that didn't consider themselves straight. And on the one hand, that's very, very shocking. But on the other hand, this is a CDC. Could the CDC have they ever had their own agenda? You know, so it's hard to know what to think sometimes. But I thought it was a good show. There's one other before I get your response. There was another episode where the prime minister wanted to launch a smoking cessation campaign. Let's get our people to quit smoking. Sir Humphrey thought that was a horrible idea. No, you don't want people to quit smoking, because we get all this revenue from the tax, and the prime minister says, yes, but we have to spend so much money on health. And he said, we'll be spending money on health care anyway. Everybody's always going to die. You're going to be spending that end-of-life money anyway. But if people are living longer, then we're going to have to pay so much more in pensions. And so it was very, very interesting. What do you think of that? Do you think you're going to rush out and get that series now for £3?
I think next time it turns up, I will get it, and I'll watch through some episodes. And sometimes with something like this as well, folks, is if you're not quite engaging, it can be worth looking up online the best Yes Minister episodes, the top 10 or something like that. And then if you don't like any of those, obviously, they could, you know, try and go to some, if you get something like off Rolling Stone or something like that, because a lot of people, you'll put up an article like that and you're like the only person who's ever read it, you've never heard of the website it comes from, and it could just be put there to kind of get clicks. But that can sometimes be a measure of doing it. Based upon what you've said, I'll definitely pick it up. I'm not that interested to sort of go onto Amazon now and buy it new for whatever price it costs, but I will pick up a second-hand copy as and when it turns up. And it tends to be fairly common, because it was very popular again in the UK, and I just noticed that same poll that Blackadder was consistently... Fawlty Towers was consistently named number one best comedy ever. Yes, Prime Minister was number six. So, again, it was very much loved by the British people. And the other point that you made about the way that essentially what they were doing was, this Sir Humphrey guy was the senior civil servant, and what the programme intimated was politicians don't make any decisions. It's the civil servants that make the decisions, who are essentially unelected. But really, we know that behind the scenes, it's actually different lobbying groups, different financial interests that make the decisions. And you touched on the CDC there, and you touched on, you know, too many people, they're living too long, we can't afford the pensions. Well, there's all sorts of conspiracy theories out there about why they did what they did to elderly people and locking them in nursing homes and getting the vaccines that aren't considered safe, etc., and how many people it's killed, and this was the whole aim of it. There's so many different claims out there. Of some people who say it's that, some people say it's completely different, some people believe the government line. So again, it's one of those mysteries that, I mean, I'm pretty sure I've got an idea of what's been going on, but I think it's the usual, let's get as much mileage out of it as we can. You know, if we can do something, what else can we get out of it? And that's what I think these people do. But I think it was incorrectly pointed at civil servants doing it when it's actually real big business interests that are really pulling the strings of any government, whether they're right or left wing. It's ultimately the big business that essentially maps out what their policies are going to be. Patrick, what are your thoughts? You are very good on politics.
Well, so one thing is different countries have different systems, and the, you know, we talk about the deep state in the United States, but the two countries whose bureaucracies I've studied is the United States and Japan, and I think the Japanese bureaucracy is modeled after the British bureaucracy. And it was a Japanese cabinet minister I was interviewing back in, was it 2020 or 2000? It was 23 years ago. And so, for instance, in the United States, when you get a new administration, they're appointing thousands and thousands of people, literally maybe 5,000 people at the top of the bureaucracy. So you at the State Department, it's not just the Secretary of State and the the Deputy Secretary of State. You go down the list, and there's dozens and dozens of positions at the top of the State Department or any other department that are political appointees. And Donald Trump would get himself in a bunch of trouble because he was not from the political world. He did not know the people he was appointing. He didn't know even the Deputy Attorney General, Rod Rosenstein. He didn't know he was appointing somebody who hated him. Rod Rosenstein was known to his friends and colleagues to hate Donald Trump. And yet somehow Donald Trump appointed him to the number two position at the Justice Department, and the number one position, the Attorney General, had recused himself of the Russia investigation. And so Donald Trump had this Mueller probe on him for 2 years because he didn't know who he was appointing. In Japan, it had – when I was originally studying it, there was only two people at the top of the bureaucracy who were political appointees, and they weren't random people either. These were people who were politicians. They were members of parliament almost always. Occasionally they weren't, but they were almost always members of parliament. So you'd have the minister, and then you would have the what they called the parliamentary vice minister, who was the parliamentary vice minister wasn't even very important, but you had the administrative vice minister, and that was the important person. So they have since beefed it up a little bit, so there are three people at the top of the bureaucracies now who are political appointees in order to reduce the power of the bureaucracy. But I remember Benjamin Fulford, who used to be mainstream enough that he would be invited to major political meetings and whatnot to cover things, and he had gone to cover. Oh, I think the finance minister, some press conference of the finance minister, and Benjamin Fulford, this was when he was just starting to transition to conspiracy theory, and he complimented the finance minister on how skillfully he read the notes prepared for him by his bureaucracy. And he was never invited back to any finance ministry press briefings again. But that's the fact. I mean, they just read notes. And sometimes what's funny is sometimes during these debates in parliament, it's not just that the minister is reading answers that had been prepared by the bureaucracy, but the person in parliament who is asking the questions is asking questions prepared by the very same bureaucrats in the ministry. So it's kind of kabuki theater.
Yes, and before we go, we've got about 5 minutes or so left. We couldn't do a sitcom show without Are You Being Served? You made reference to Mr. Humphries at the start, so I'm going to hand over to you to let us all know whatever you'd like to say about Are You Being Served, Patrick?
Yeah, so that was from – and that had many series. That went on for a long time, and a lot of cast changes, or at least a few cast changes. At the gentleman's wear position, I guess the chief salesman kept changing over and over again because some of them were elderly and died, I suppose. But one of the things that really struck me about it, and it was almost all on the floor of a department store, a very small set. Occasionally they were in Mr. Rumbold's office or something like that. But they were these characters, they were, you know, none of them were particularly successful. They were working this job at in retail sales. And there just wasn't a lot going on. They, you know, it wasn't big glamorous people. They were almost all middle-aged. I guess Miss Brahms was pretty. And she was younger, but for the most part, these are middle-aged and elderly people. And it's not the type of stuff that you would see so much on an American sitcom. And I'd watch it, and it did seem, honestly, it did seem like Britain was an empire in decline or an empire that no longer was. The types of things they were talking about, the inflation and they never seemed to have very much money. It just seemed like a society in decline. That's what it was reflecting. But of course, things have gotten much, much worse, because one difference was they didn't seem to feel they had a need to show a lot of diversity. There was the cast and the people coming into the stores. They were
a twit, he had his beard. From now he always shall be single. To fall in love with boys is weird, especially boys without a tingle.
Hello, I'm Dr. Leonard Horowitz. I was right 30 years ago in warning the world about threatening lab virus outbreaks, AIDS, and Ebola. I was right 20 years ago when FBI Director Robert Mueller made me a suspect in the anthrax mailings because I warned the Bureau before the CIA's biocrime and Cipro sales psyops happened. I was right about COVID-19 being an AIDS-laced mutagen planned to resurge this fall to excuse officials' profitable depopulation globalization agendas. And I was right about the only safeguards being antioxidants and holy spiritual sustenance. Vitamin C, D, zinc, chlorophyll, oxygen, and oxysilver especially transmits the frequency resonance to neutralize the expanded function bioweapon. Oxysilver is a double superconductor of the healing power of love. It is the first nutraceutical invented to amplify prayer power and the faithful, loving intention of your heart. Buy, try, and stockpile OxySilver through HealthyWorldStore.com.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on long-term food storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org. Smash that donate button like Russian peacekeepers smashing through the Azov neo-Nazi terrorists in the Donbass.
I don't think you can explain politics without looking at Jewish power any more than you can explain physics without dealing with gravity.
9/11 was a jointly conducted covert operation that involved multiple states, the Saudis, the Israelis, and what you could call the deep state in the United States.
With anti-Semitic remarks.
yeah, you're jiggling juice, we used to say, the dancing Israelis.
So even the Republicans now are compromising, and they're pushing issues that are destructive to the white race.
They would always say, like, are we just going to talk about this stuff on the radio? Like, what are we going to do about it?
Either we force the democracy to work by actually getting the ballot access, getting the candidates, getting in office, getting our message out there to the people, or we expose just how undemocratic it is.
The Patrick and Jeremy Show, Tuesday at 9 Central and Wednesday at 1 Central.
One difference was they didn't seem to feel they had a need to show a lot of diversity. There was the cast and the people coming into the stores. They were all British and very, archetype British type people. They weren't having a whole lot of diversity. And so that was interesting, but that was 50 years ago. So what do you have to tell me about it?
Well, I've seen it all. I actually watched it. I'd seen it when I was growing up, you know, so I'd never have seen all the episodes then because some of the series were broadcast before I was born. Started off the 8th of September 1972, and it ran until the 1st of April 1985. The series was short, so although there was not 10 series, it was 69 episodes only in total, around 7 episodes a series. But as you say, it was a very sort of traditional kind of comedy, a very English comedy, and it almost, when I was, you know, when all this alternative comedy came along that I was talking about, you were kind of being sort of pulled over to that side, and you thought that you were somehow being going against the system, and, you know, Are You Being Served is just some boring comedy and what have you. And then you look at it now and you see, well, Are You Being Served actually was the more anarchic sort of comedy than the so-called alternative comedy that came along in the 1980s, which essentially was just like the wokery of today. It was trying to sell you political beliefs based upon comedy, whereas they're trying to sell you political beliefs today based upon environmentalism. So that's my thoughts. Any thoughts before we go, Patrick? We've got a couple of minutes left.
Do we have a couple of minutes left? Are you free? Well, okay. I like to watch these things, and as a political scientist, I often look in it for, you know, various messages. But the British stuff, I enjoyed. It was fun. There are American sitcoms that I'm very familiar with, but I just think the British sitcoms, that the writing is better, and I suppose it's because maybe they only do 6 shows per year, as opposed to, if you're looking at the Mary Tyler Moore Show, they were probably doing, say, 20 or 25 shows a year. They're just pumping them out a lot more. It's high quality, but on the other hand, if you really like a particular show, like I like Father Ted, well, there's only 26 episodes, and how often can you watch them? That's the problem. Whereas I Love Lucy must have a couple hundred shows.
Yeah. Well, All in the Family, for example. Yeah, absolutely right. Because I read up a lot on All in the Family. If any of you are interested in that, folks, go to achshow.com. I did a feature on The Line Is on Monday show, yesterday's show, on that. Some interesting backdrop to where that went, and we might talk about that ourselves in the future. But the first series, 13 episodes. Then they did another 8 series, I believe. It was 9 series total. 71 to 79, and all the subsequent series were at least 24 episodes. And then what they would do is that they would run they would repeat the series in the summer. And so essentially you're getting 48 episodes in a 52-week year. So you only have 4 weeks off, and then the kind of new series starts. So you can see why they do it that way, and that's also reflected in things like The X-Files. So many of these shows that I've seen from America, they're running to, many of them, 24 episodes, and that's what they were doing back then, I guess, because the network would invest in that. That would cover them for the year, and then they'd do the repeat season as well. So it was kind of a model. But that, as you say, Patrick, that can be difficult. You're going to have more than a bigger team of writers, and that means that the show can go in different directions and not remain so focused on what it started off as. So any comments before we go?
No. Thank you for joining me, Andy. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
You won't admit you love me, and so how am I ever to know? You always tell me, perhaps, perhaps, perhaps.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site, It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.